This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Mark Kermode is here, some correspondence is here, and we also need to thank a listener whose name we don't know. An anonymous listener, and hello to podcast listeners, to vodcast viewers.
To Jason Isaacs.
Jason Isaacs, David Morrissey. I need to put the light on, actually, because I forgot, because vodcast viewers won't actually be able to see what we're talking about.
That's okay. I mean, in a way, it'll be noir lighting, won't it?
I don't think they want noir lighting on
a
vodcast.
No, they do. They want mystery. They want suspense. They want intrigue. They want suggestion rather than explicit detail. I mean, I've always said that was the best way of doing it.
Okay, so we'll get to the...
Blimey, it's light in here now.
There's piles and piles of correspondence to get through, but we should mention the listener or listeners who... designed our own coffee mugs. Mark always gets the coffee, though. It was my turn this week. Seemed fair enough.
No, I got it. You paid for it.
Oh, that's right. And whoever it is who sent us a couple of mugs says, Mark Kermode's film reviews. And then it says, Wittertainment at its most wittertaining. And it's got a little lid.
And it says, Mayo to go. You're missing that bit out rather self-effacingly. On the button.
Where is that?
On the button there.
I haven't got a button.
What do you mean you haven't got a button? On your picture.
That says radio.
No, it doesn't. It says
radio
mayo.
To go. You're as blind as a bat, you are.
No, it doesn't say radio to go.
Anyway, the good news for the listeners is that we're not going to sue you for breaking the copyright of the BBC logo and the 5 Live logo. But thanks for the mugs, anyway, which we hold up for vodcast viewers.
Yes, there we go. Thank you.
Box office top 10 this week. At 10, Spider-Man 3.
Well, it's about time it left the top 10. It's been around for ages. I was trying to figure out the other day, it was such a long film, and if it's been in the top 10 for that long, how much time will have been taken up in the world by the projection of Spider-Man 3 and whether it couldn't have been spent in best ways
to think about?
Well, when I was watching the film, I had to find something to fill the hours, the huge, vast abyss of stuff going on.
Shivaji, would that be right at 9?
Yes, and I don't know, because, again, we were not press shown this. From the IMDb, it says that it is a Tamil film. They've had some problems about the release date, but it's finally released last week. The genre is adventure, drama, romance, although I have to say that doesn't really cover very much. So if anybody has seen Shivaji, it's not reviewed on the BBC site, which is often very up-to-date. Please email us a review. Please try and keep it to 3 sentences.
Tell no one at number 8. Actually, before you do that, Dave in Putney. Simon and the Doctor, my wife and I went to see Tell No One last weekend, which we thoroughly enjoyed.
Good.
Dr. K is, unusually, entirely wrong about U2. The double bill of them and Jeff Buckley on the same soundtrack is a good thing. Now, this refers to... This is 3 minutes before the end of last week's programme. Mm-hmm. We had the shortest and most impulsive text vote ever. Elke Brooks versus U2. That's what...
To explain to anybody how you got from Jeff Buckley to Elke Brooks.
Yes.
And it very quickly goes like this. There are 2 songs in the film. One of them is U2's With or Without You, which is dreary, dirgy nonsense. But it turns out to be an important plot point, so that's how it works. And the other one is a version of Lilac Wine. I said, there's Lilac Wine. And
you said, most people will have thought of Elke Brooks because that was the
You hit. Said, not Elke Brooks' Lilac Wine. I said, no, not Elke Brooks' Lilac Wine. I wasn't sure whose version it was, but I've been subsequently assured that it is Jeff Buckley. And I said, it's absolutely wonderful. You said 2 things that were completely stupid. The first one was that Lilac Wine is a really terrible song, which it clearly isn't.
As sung by Elke Brooks, it is.
No, you didn't say that. You just said Lilac Wine as sung by anybody. And then when somebody emailed in to say that Jeff Buckley did it, you suddenly did the most incredible U-turn. The lady is for turning on that. You suddenly said, oh, if Jeff Buckley did it, obviously it's a great song. And then we had a row about Elke Brooks versus U2.
The rewriting of history, as I'm sure regular listeners will remember, has been quite Lenin-esque in its proportions. This from...
That, as in Lennon and McCartney.
That's right. Alistair, Simon, for goodness sake, stand up for what you believe in. Last week, the clearly tone-deaf doctor said, you two have never made a good record. You likened him to a prejudiced taxi driver that isn't worth arguing with. I disagree. This really needs to be dealt with. So, here goes. Okay. One Tree Hill, where the streets have no name. Original of the species, mysterious ways, with or without you. Do you feel loved, stuck in the moment? The Fly, Electric Co, I Will Follow, God Part 2. Vertigo, a sort of homecoming. Bad, out of control, I could go on. Or Lilac Wine. Come on, Simon, stand up for what you believe.
No, but that's the list of unlistenable U2 records. When does the list of good ones start? I'm sorry. Best U2 moment ever in that film, Rattle and Hum, which has a different title in my house. There's that
That's
thing,
a great film.
When no, it's not. When they're playing that on the semi-acoustic, they're doing that version of All Along the Watchtower. Ding, ding, ding. Oh, it's not quite right. Ding, ding, ding. And then suddenly, when they're in the stadium, da-na-na, and you think, I'm sorry, it was better with the acoustic guitars when you're out of tune. They are rubbish and then some. That guy walks like John Wayne. Any guitarist who calls himself The Edge and wears a silly hat because he's gone bald deserves to have stuff thrown
That's
at him.
That's right. So anyone who was watching television a few weeks ago and they wanted to vote off the ludicrous double bass playing player at the extreme right but couldn't because their red button wasn't working, that would have been
that
you
wasn't
then.
An option.
So by the way, that text vote, the instantaneous text vote, this was over 2.5 minutes. We've gone back and counted. It was 271 for Elky.
Yes.
213 for U2. Yes. Elky's vote does include three but U2 votes, whereas U2 got one person who'd never heard of Elky Brooks. I did suggest that we just added in record sales, but that was unfairly got rid of as an idea.
Yeah, not unfairly. I mean, I'm sure under currently EU regulations, you'd be absolutely justified in doing that because that's the way the world is going.
Anyway, here we go. We've only got to number eight. Wedding Days at 7.
Well, you know, not as funny as it needs to be. I'm sorry, I thought, have we finished with Tell No One? Because I started to say something about it, but then we got into Elky Brooks' thing. It's an interesting film. It loses its way at the end. It gets tied up in too many plots, but it is interesting. Yeah. And it's based on a novel by Harlan Coben. He's American. Thank you. And it's French, and I like it.
6, Joom Baraba Joom.
And again, now, we weren't press shown this, and again, I would like anyone who's seen June Balabar June to write in. Apparently, there is a cameo by Amitabh Bachchan, and I have got down from the internet a picture of Amitabh Bachchan, who's a great, you know, Indian film star, playing a double-necked guitar in the manner of Jimmy Page in The Song Remains the Same. And this, in itself, is enough to make me want somebody to email in and tell me whether the film is as good as that still.
Are we done yet at 5?
And I wish we were, and presumably there'll be another one. It's unbelievable that film went top 10. It's absolutely staggering. It's a sequel. The original shouldn't have existed. The sequel certainly shouldn't have existed. And there'll be another one called, you know, Are We Rotting in Hell Yet? It's really, really terrible.
Vacancy at 4?
It's a nuts and bolts, join the dots slasher movie that everyone has seen before. People check into a motel. The guy behind the counter is twitchy. They're surprised when it turns out to be Motel Hell and it's a set of a snuff movie. It's only 85 minutes long. And for about 50 minutes, it kind of gets away with it. And it has no third act whatsoever. And it is amazing for a film that's that short to be a bit dull at the end. But there's 50 minutes of fine stuff. And in a season in which we're about to have Captivity and Hostel 2, you know, it's not terrible. And certainly compared with those films, it is at least funny.
Pirates of the Caribbean at the World's End at number 3.
Can you still download that review? Not
no.
You. Can one still download that review?
I think it's been and gone.
Has
27,000 downloads of that particular podcast.
Excellent.
I think it is on YouTube. I think it's still there if you know how to use
what
that
kind
of
thing. What
is YouTube? Ocean's 13 at number 2.
I mean, just complete rubbish and a real shame that they did it. The only thing you can say about it in its favour is that it's not as bad as Ocean's 12. It has, however, got the reappearance of Julian Sands, who I thought was gone, you know, from our big screens. And it is true that when he comes on screen, just any zest, any zip, any zang, any sense of life just implodes into this black hole of absolute charisma bypass territory. It's like Doctor Who.
Simon in Bournemouth, it's come to my attention over the past few weeks while listening to the podcast of the programme that the good doctor has been shelling out some inexplicably harsh criticism of the fine English actor Julian Sands, and this led me to do a little research into said Mr. Sands' previous work, as I was sure that he'd been in a number of quality productions.
Warlock.
And sure enough, the list is long, with, to name but a few, Killing Fields, Room with a View, Arachnophobia, Naked Lunch and Leaving Las Vegas, all on his CV. To prove my point still further, I then watched Arachnophobia, and it was then, about 10 minutes in, that I was struck by the sudden realisation that all of the films are in fact good,
in spite of Julian Sands
being in them, and not because he was in them. And you talked over the punchline.
I'm sorry.
I therefore unreservedly apologise to Dr. Kermit for questioning his opinion on this matter and promise it'll never happen again. Desire was a good record.
No, it wasn't. It was rubbish. On that subject, when I reviewed Leaving Las Vegas, which I do love, it's Mike Figgis' film, it's absolutely great, and I reviewed it for, I think, Q Magazine, and I only gave it 4 stars rather than 5, despite saying it's a masterpiece, because I took 1 star off because Julian Sands is in it in the beginning. And it is impossible for that, you know, for that not to have some detrimental impact.
Do Ocean's 13?
That's what Julian Sands comes from. You see, that's what's happened. Even the mention of his name has caused your brain function to sort of, you know, cease to work.
The UK's number one film, Fantastic Four, or not Fantastic Four, just Four.
Four.
Rise of the Silver Surfer.
It's not a good Silver Surfer movie. It's got that gag about Jessica Alba's clothes all falling off. It's PG rated and it's shiny and spangly, so therefore no darkness, but it has too much innuendo for the very young audience. I mean, it's innocuous and it's not massively overlong, but it isn't any good. And it is, I'm afraid, called Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer. This is on the British Film Institute's basis that a film is called what it says on the title card. And the title card, and indeed the BBFC certificate, says Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, because they couldn't call it Fantastic Four 2, because that would confuse everybody.
Lex in Worcester, I hate summer blockbusters, but I really liked Four, Silver Surfer.
Really?
The torch was the true centre of the film, a good attempt at the comics spirit.
But it's not, because the problem with...
He says it is.
Well, you know, it's a difference of opinion. You can finish that sentence, you know how it goes. But the thing about it is that there is something in the Silver Surfer mythology. I mean, I'm not a big comic books fan. Let's be honest about this, right? I've got nothing against them. I'm just not a big comic books fan. But there is something about Silver Surfer and the mythology of Silver Surfer, and actually the way in which Silver Surfer has been used in cinema before, and I would cite, once again, Jim McBride's Breathless. It's possible to do something with the Silver Surfer mythology, and this isn't it.
Jim in Bath. It's him who made our mugs.
Oh, thanks, Jim in Bath. Thank
he sent another text, and he says, thanks for not suing him for breaking the copyright. That's fine. We'll do some reviews of some big movies coming out this week, although there's a sort of a lull before the big summer blockbusters, because we have La Vie en Rose, Captivity, and Lucky You to do
PTU.
And PTU. Martin in Old Portsmouth says, Simon and Sprout Boy.
Same... guy who said Sprout Boy before.
Yeah, I think Mark should enter into the spirit of things when reviewing La Vie en Rose by doing the review in the style of Edith Piaf. An easy enough task if you take the following instructions. 1. Take your dominant hand. 2. Hold it horizontally with fingers together just in front of your throat. 3. Move it towards you until the side of your index finger is resting in the little hollow just under the edge of the Adam's apple. For podcast viewers, Mark is actually doing this. Jiggle your hand up and down as fast as possible with just enough amplitude to make the Adam's apple wobble, and then sing.
No, rien de rien.
Step back and accept the gales of applause. Mark has to do this, especially as the Oddcast is being recorded. So that was a particularly Oddcast fine moment, I think. For everyone else, La Vie en Rose, this has got to our favourite French actor.
Ooh, Gérard Depardieu.
That's the one I've been waiting for.
Non-biopic of Edith Piaf, The Little Sparrow. Unlike Gary Busey in The Buddy Holly Story or Joaquin Phoenix in Walk the Line, Marianne Cotillard, who plays Edith Piaf, doesn't do her own singing. I mean, actually, there's a couple of little bits in it which you do hear her own singing, but largely she is lip-syncing to Edith Piaf. And I suppose the rationale behind this is that Piaf has such a distinctive voice, had such a distinctive voice, that nobody could possibly do an impression of her. At least that's the theory. I mean, obviously, you see, Elaine Page did play Piaf on stage in Piaf and, you know, gave it some welly. So Marianne Cotillard really, you know, gives it the performance to the max. And she has the stance, she has the teeth, she has the hair pieces, she has all the latex stippled aging makeup appliances, you know, throughout the life of Edith Piaf. Actually, a surprisingly brief life of Edith Piaf. Now, to be fair, she does go for it, and considering that the stuff that she's been in before is the thing like the Taxi movies and that terrible Ridley Scott movie, A Good Year, which she's in, which is absolutely awful, and suddenly she comes out of the corner with feet and fists flying, and she really gives it some, and people are saying, you know, oh, it's an awards performance. It's certainly an awards courting performance. There are definitely, you know, large moments in which you're looking to say, give me an award now, because look how many life moments I've gone through. Fine. Here's the problem with La Vie en Rose. Piaf's life was absolutely incident-packed, if the stories are to be believed. You know, she apparently virtually born on the street, grew up in a brothel, went busking with an acrobat father who had been busking, then she would sing the Marseillaise, and then she wound up in Pigalle, and she was picked up off the streets by a bloke played by Gérard Depardieu, and the next thing is that she's, you know, in night, she's being celebrated, and all this stuff happens, and she marries a boxer, and there's a plane crash, and just huge incident. I mean, it's one of those lives that kind of offers itself up to a biopic maker, says, here, take from me what you will. I am an open book bottle of quaffable source material. Go ahead, do what you will. And Olivia de Haan has said, I shall do exactly that. Now, unfortunately, what he's decided to do is to not tell PF's life story chronologically, but to tell it in the manner of an emotional collage. Right?
Which What's means an emotional collage?
It means it's not in the right order.
Right.
Okay, well, that's what it means. It's like taking PF's life, putting it on an iPod and hitting the shuffle function, okay?
So emotional collage button, as I will now refer to
it. They should refer to it exactly like that, because that's what
so
it is.
So when a teenager next to me, that's so random, I'll say,
no, it's
an emotional
collage.
Okay.
And that will now replace the death of narrative cinema as the watchword for the show for the next few weeks. Now, there are several problems with this. One of them is that the emotional collage formula means that we go from young to old, from healthy to unhealthy, amid scenes. And what this does, which is really not very fair to Marion Cotillard, is it draws attention to the changing wigs and hairpieces and dental appliances. Because if it happened sort of organically, you kind of wouldn't notice. But when one minute she's standing up, you know, like a whip of a thing, and the next minute she's got the funny wig on, and then she's in the bath chair, and the next minute she's standing up again, and then you end up looking at the makeup, and that is really bad. From an actor's point of view, to end up looking at the makeup is never a good thing. The second thing is, it facilitates some howling ellipses. World War II does not happen in this film, which is a particularly strange ellipsis, considering that, you know, during World War II, PF did sing for, you know, high-ranking Germans, but on the other hand, she was working for the resistance. This is now widely accepted. It's a very interesting part in her life. There's a story about her being photographed with prisoners, and her singing enabled her to have these photographs, saying the photograph was then used to make passports for the prisoner. And, I mean, she was deeply involved in some great intrigue. But no, we skip over that. So we go from wheelbarrows in cobbled streets over here, and then we go to stages with cobbled bouquets, and then we go to Gérard Depardieu, and then we go to this other bloke coming off the boxing guy. And it's all... So, Eve, you're going, who? Where? When this is which year? And then, in between, we get lip-syncing. We get lip-syncing to the classic songs, including La Vie en Rose, and we keep coming back to the image of Edith Piaf collapsing on stage. And after a while, I mean, the film is 2 hours, 20 minutes long, but you get to the end of it thinking, I've missed a whole reel. There's a whole bit that somehow glues all this stuff together, that the guy in the projection box has fallen asleep and he hasn't put it in. You know, where is all that stuff? In the last 10, 15 minutes of the movie, suddenly a daughter turns up. I mean, you think, I've been there for 2 hours. That's the Exorcist was less than 2 hours from beginning to end. And suddenly introduce an extra whole child at the very end. It's like, oh, sorry. And as a footnote, you know what else was difficult? Sorry about not mentioning World War II, but hey, don't mention the war. Incidentally, there was a kid. And then you get to the end of the film and it comes out and there's the sound of Edith Piaf ringing. And the cumulative effect of it is like this. It is like being in a French theme pub with a bit of a hangover. And you come out going, oh, you know, je regrette plenty, frankly.
It's probably not there. There are no such thing as French theme pubs.
I bet there are.
I bet there's not.
I bet there are. Email now. Text now to tell us the last time you're in a French theme pub.
You notice there's a newsreader and a sportscaster waiting to go.
Oh, don't let me intrude.
No, absolutely. Anyway, so lots more to come, plus a race. And this very specific request from Terry.
Mm-hmm.
What's the best film, Simon and the Doc, to take my female Japanese lodger to see? She's 37.
Well...
Do you want to think about that?
No, but does it have to be this weekend?
Well, yeah,
Weekend.
No, in a couple of years, please.
No, because next weekend there's a re-release of that film, When a Woman Ascends the Stairs, which is a very interesting film.
Let's go for now, then, shall we?
Well, I think that isn't Woman of the Dunes currently playing? I mean, that's an interesting, because Japanese movie... And so I think actually what you should do if you're taking your Japanese lodger to see a film is that you should go and see a Japanese film, because it sounds to me like that would be...
It would show willing, wouldn't it?
It would show willing, but also it would open you up to an interesting cultural experience.
OK, well, that plus Captivity and Lucky You and a race, all to come before four, plus... and hello to our friends, David Morrissey.
And Jason Isaac. We did do that. And it's really interesting.
Again, and Jason Isaac, of course, coming back very soon.
Because Harry Potter.
Yeah, absolutely. Mr. Malfoy will be back for us to boo and hiss one more time.
Yeah, and you're apparently going to that screening.
I think I'm going to see it tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
Yes, ahead of you. Isn't that fine?
I was offered that. I just didn't want to go in the middle of a week.
What else is new?
Captivity. and I say this with a heavy heart. There's been a lot of stuff in the press recently about the so-called torture porn thing, you know, movies in which basically it's just torture, gratuitous torture for the sake of it, and this is off the back of the success of Saw. And I do think the Saw series is boring. I mean, that's the worst you can say about it. It's boring and silly and stupid. And then along comes Captivity, and basically the story of Captivity is a model is kidnapped, and she's put in some horrible dungeon by some crazed maniac who makes her dress up in short skirts and stiletto heels, and it's really unpleasant to her because of something that happened with his mother, and there's another guy who appears to be in there with her, and she falls in love with him, except of course she doesn't, and then a whole bunch more nasty stuff happens. Now, in America, there was a fuss about the poster of Captivity. It was a four-panel poster that said, capture, confinement, torture, termination. It was images of, you know, what appeared to be, you know, the star of the movie in these sort of various states of horribleness. And quite rightly, a lot of people in America said, I'm sorry, I don't want that. That's really gross and crass and stupid. And Joss Whedon, in fact, you remember Joss Whedon, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, wrote on his blog about, you know, this is really not on. And so they all got slap wrists. And now the movie kind of finally comes out. And whenever people write articles about torture porn and horror movies, they generally haven't seen the movies. And you want to be able to leap to their defense and say, you know what, you don't know what you're talking about. You haven't seen the films. You don't know anything. And the worst thing about Captivity is a truly terrible film. You know, let's make no bones about this. It's a grotty, nasty, sleazy, not in a good way, stupid, infantile piece of dung, okay? And it has no right to be in anybody's cinemas whatsoever. It's made worse by a number of things. One of them is, it's directed by Roland Joffe, the man who made The Mission, the man who made The Killing Fields. Yeah. The man who, you know, used to be up there for Oscars, you know, somebody who was taken very seriously, now has his name on this movie. And it's written by Larry Cohen, you know, Cue the Winged Serpent, It's Alive. If you're a genre fan, you know, Larry Cohen is a smart guy. And you really sit there watching Captivity, which is really foul. Not foul in a kind of cannibal holocaust kind of, oh, it's so extreme, you know, some people want to change. Just foul in a sort of really prurient, leery, misogynistic in that kind of way that you thought just genuinely wasn't legal anymore. It's like the 60s and the 70s never happened. It's like nobody ever wrote all the, you know, the great feminist works, and we're right back where we started, that it is perfectly okay to take women and abuse them hideously under the guise of entertainment. And the worst thing about Captivity is this. It was made a couple of years ago it's a Russian-American co-production. I have to say that on the basis of this, I want the Cold War to start again now, okay? I want missiles out. I want full-on aggression, because if this is what cooperation looks like, I'm not having any of it.
Maybe a little extreme.
No, sorry, you haven't seen the film. I mean, really.
That's also,
you know,
true.
You need to see Captivity, just see how bad it is. And what happened was, they made the film, and then it played at the Sitges Film Festival in 2006. And the American distributors bought, they said, well, actually, we want more gore. So they went back and they substantially reshot more of it. So not only is it really pretty foul and grim, but it's also incoherently foul and grim. So you end up with a film that has got Roland Joffe, you know, it's his film, and, you know, I'm sorry, he has to take full responsibility for it. As far as I understand, he was looking after the reshoots as well. It's really sleazy and nasty and cheap and stupid and horrible to women and horrible to humanity and horrible to anybody who thinks that if you're going to have gore and filth, I'd like it to be coherent gore and filth. And the worst thing about it is that the next time you read one of those torture porn arguments, you know, you're going to have to say, well, the real shame of it is I didn't agree with any of it. And then I saw Captivity, and it's like, as far as own goals are concerned, and it's always the case, it's outsiders that mess it up, right? You give it to proper horror directors, don't make films like that. Films like that are made by people like Roland Joffe, people who wander in and say, oh, I can do a horror film. I'm very intelligent. It's a thriller and a love story. No, it's not. It's an erotic. No, it isn't. It's a horrible, you should be ashamed of it. You should be thoroughly ashamed of it. And
that's a pretty spectacular fall from grace. Most people familiar with The Mission, most people familiar with them, Killing Fields, Heart in the Right Place.
Lucifer falling from the heavens and plummeting into the eternal pit of, you know, darkness visible.
Yes.
Had nothing on the decline of Roland Joffe at the moment he said, you know what, Captivity, I'm going to sign on for that. That sounds like an absolutely great movie. And then at the moment when the distributor said, Roland, we really like the film, but what we'd like is a lot more gore. And he said, it's just grotesque. And you sit there thinking, it's incredibly boring for a start. I mean, please don't go and see it on the grounds that, oh, it's so extreme, I have to. It's not. It's just asinine, infantile claptrap that happens almost completely accidentally, because it has no brain power whatsoever, to be a really, really nasty, misogynist track that goes some way towards blaming the beautiful woman at the centre of all this for everything that's happening to her. And I just think everyone involved should be hit with a rubber hose.
Oh, not thoroughly ashamed of themselves.
No, they should be thoroughly ashamed of themselves whilst being hit with a rubber hose.
Matt in Greenwich, Jum Baraba Jum is
Thank
a
you.
Real Hindi treat. Top script, very funny, full of joie de vivre, and a wonderful title track that drives the whole film. Simon, I write to express concern that my German friend Arnie won't get his cleaning done if tempted by Kermit in a Vipco. That's a podcast.
Yeah.
Every Thursday.
Thank you for using that.
Every Thursday he dusts and cleans whilst listening to the podcast. Please stop distracting him with the vodcast. It will only lead to a decline in the general state of the world. Are you a bit of a gay icon?
Look who's asking.
Peter from Stratford, Ontario.
But yes, I am.
In Canada. Today is my 22nd birthday. Could you get the good doctor to wish me a happy birthday when he says hello to Jason and David?
Happy, what, name? Name?
Pay attention. Peter Graham.
Name, pay attention. Peter Graham. Hello, Peter.
Dan in Bournemouth.
Happy birthday from a gay icon.
As a fan of the Fantastic Four comics, I found Dr. Kerman's review to be completely off base.
Yeah, go on.
I thought The Fantastic Four 2 was an extremely enjoyable movie with great action, an improvement in every way on the original. The Silver Surfer story was exactly the same as in the original comic, and overall, a worthy adaptation.
But what it isn't is an introduction to the mythology of the Silver Surfer. And I know everyone always comes back to this, you know, that's how that story pans out in the original comic. I know that's not enough. I'm sorry. It just being faithful to the comic is not enough. It really isn't. Because there's just no point.
On the subject of French theme pubs, mm-hmm. we were talking
oh,
about.
Oh, yes, good, fine.
Well, we haven't really got one, really, because we've got this from Al in Glasgow. It's a French theme park, Parc Asterix, which is just outside Paris.
And but that's in France.
A sad Trekkie in Leeds says they had a holographic French theme pub in Star Trek Voyager TV series. See, they don't exist.
The V on Space.
Jeff says, is it possible that Captivity is a worse film than Pirates of the Caribbean 3? Which would Mark go and see again if he had
well,
to?
Well, I'll tell you, that's a very interesting point. I think that Pirates of the Caribbean 3 probably is indicative of the collapse of Western civilization. But I think that Captivity is so repugnant and so without any redeeming features whatsoever. I mean, I had no expectation of Pirates of the Caribbean 3. And I think I'd rather sit through Pirates of the Caribbean 3 than sit through Captivity again.
Ian in Cardiff, I've seen Captivity. It's utter tripe.
Yeah,
personally, I'd sooner sandblast my scrotum than subject myself to a nasty piece of celluloid like that again. So
that seems pretty definitive. That's going on the poster.
I think so. Lucky you.
And yet another case of good directors go bad. Curtis Hanson, he used to make things like, you know, L.A. Confidential and 8 Mile. And recently, In Her Shoe, as we call it, ever since Mark Gatiss came on the show. And now this story is Eric Banner. Eric Banner, when he started his career, was great. Did you ever see that film Chopper?
Was that based on the New English Library kind of original Chopper?
No, I don't think so. Was there a New English Library original
yeah,
Chopper?
Was, yeah.
No, it was a life story of a guy called Chopper. He was, you know, nasty piece of work. He wrote several books about his life called How I've Been a Nasty Piece of Work, But I'm Quite Entertaining, Really. And Eric Banner, who I think actually had a background in stand-up comedy, played him very, very effectively. And then he started doing things like Troy and Hulk and Munich and becoming quite boring. And now here he is being fantastically boring in Lucky You. And the story is he's a gambler who, according to the script, he plays cards like he should lead his life. And he leads his life like he should play cards. That is, until Drew Barrymore comes along.
That good?
I mean, honestly, and it's 124 minutes long, and you feel every single one of them on your derriere. I mean, it's a real shame. Robert Duvall, as opposed to Robin Duvall, the former leader of the BBFC, Robert Duvall, he who loves the smell of napalm in the morning, wears a funny toupee, and that's funny for about 10 seconds. And Eric Banner plays a lot of poker. And it's one of those films that makes it thinks that there's, you know, hey, there's real tension in cinematic poker. And you're sitting there thinking, no, it's a bunch of guys and some girls sitting around table playing cards. And you know what? It's not that exciting. They put the cards down, they pick the cards up, they look at them, they look at each other, they make their bets, and then the game stops. And then they do it again. And then they do it again. And then they do it again some more. And then it ends up in a great big tournament when a lot of them do it an awful lot. Now, apparently, if you have satellite television on one of the Sky or whatever it is, inter-prong channels, what do you call those things? You know, the ones
satellite channels?
The ones that are not the BBC.
Yes.
Everything else.
Satellite channels.
There is one which enables you to watch people playing poker. Alternatively, you could get a life and actually go and play poker with some of your friends. Or do some gardening and get an allotment. But I cannot imagine the derelict state of your life. You go, I know, I got 2 hours free. I'll go to the cinema to see a PG-rated movie in which Eric Banner plays poker forever. And that's what happens. And, you know, it's a real shame. And I think that Curtis Hanson thinks that it's going to have a real hit with those people who like watching live, full-on pro-celebrity poker. And unfortunately, it's just another sort of, you know, step on the downward spiral that his career has taken recently. But in comparison with Captivity, I mean, at least Curtis Hanson is only guilty of being boring.
Next week, we're at Wimbledon.
Oh, hooray.
You're looking forward to that again.
I'm thrilled.
Your tennis education continues.
My toes are tingling even as we speak.
2 weeks at Wimbledon coming up.
Wimbledon's the one with the rackets, right?
And we're there on Monday. Your movie of the week.
PTU. It's a Johnny 2 movie. It's a re-release from... No, it's not really. It's
we haven't reviewed it.
From 2003, right? Two Johnny 2 movies at the moment. Exiled and PTU. Go and see either of them as opposed to this other stuff.
Jack says the Clay Mart in Scunthorpe was a French-themed pub.
There we go.
It's now closed.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.